Dear Lord, Great Spirit, may we feel truth and honor wisdom. May we cultivate love as the armor gives way. May we be fully at peace as we find presence. May we be free from harm as we find full expression. May we be healthy and our vessels be clear. May we be strong as our light shines through. May our endurance withstand all pressures. May the will power all action as we align with our higher selves. May we be at ease and happy as we rest in the equal insignificance and importance of all.
Thank you, thank you, thank you,
and so it is.
Welcome to Forge Your Health Podcast. This is a show about personal empowerment. I am Justin Ribner.
And I'm Emily Jones.
Tune in weekly as guests join us from all walks of life
to seek richness in the daily experience,
to help define individual values,
to cast aside imposed identity,
and to seek a dynamic range of emotional content
by following our highest excitements,
and by investing in all things naturally whole and good on this earth.
Hello, dear listeners. This show is brought to you by nobody other than us. So if you would like to show us that we are bringing value into your life by producing this content, and there are a couple of ways that you can do that. First and foremost, if you haven't already left us a rating or a review, that would be extremely helpful in helping us expand our outreach and grow our audience. That is the number one way that podcasts increase in their visibility to people who are not already subscribed on Apple Podcasts and on other platforms. So if you aren't already, then please make sure that you're subscribed. And if you would take just 30 seconds to leave a 5-star rating and a quick review, that would mean the world to us. The other best way that you can help us keep these wheels turning is if you go to forgeyourhealth.com and check out our coaching services, our holistic lifestyle coaching services are my main offering back to society, basically. I help people grow. I help people get healthier. I help people get stronger. I help people achieve their goals and dreams in a truly holistic fashion that brings intrinsic growth. So if you want to experience less stress in your life, if you want to experience more time to be able to do the things you enjoy, if you want to experience less pain and more stillness, more centeredness, more self-esteem, you want to improve your relationships, you want to have better communication skills, you want to be more successful in life or in business in general, then hop over to our website where you'll be able to sign up for a free 30-minute discovery call where you can learn more about how I run my services and we can see if it's a good fit for you. Lastly, we've recently started our very own Patreon page at patreon.com/forgeyourhealth. We are doing for $5 a month a weekly ceremony circle where I am giving lessons on meditation. We meditate together for 30 minutes every Sunday at 12 noon Central Time. Those recordings are available afterward if you can't make the live sessions. That is $1.25 a week for access to a loving and caring and supportive community of fellow peoples who are invested in personal growth. And it's been a profound experience so far. I really love doing it. I hope that you'll join us soon. I'm doing it as an offering of sorts in loving service and devotion to my craft. And so it's basically the highest quality meditation lessons and sessions that you can think of for the lowest cost you'll ever find. We also have higher tiers. Starting at $10 a month, you'll have access to a biweekly mastermind session that is a group atmosphere focused on a mutual fostering of the highest self in all participants. That's going to be really fun and a great way to stay in tune with your purpose
without necessarily the larger investment that it takes in order to engage in one-on-one life coaching. The perks go up from there. There's a few other cool things if you want to check it out. Once again, patreon.com/forgerhealth. And without further ado, here is today's show. Thank you so much for listening. And do not forget that you are loved and that you are never alone. All right. Welcome to another episode of Forger Health Podcast. This is the 33rd episode of our podcast, Emily. How auspicious is that?
Very auspicious.
Very auspicious. Is that all you have to say for yourself, Miss Chiropractor Lady?
Yes.
Okay.
We maybe should have taken a break from this series and done a chiropractic episode.
We've done too many chiropractic episodes already.
True.
Okay. Today we are talking about letting go as a core tenet of healing from chronic disease states, from growth experiences, from transitions in life. Healing and growing are really kind of the same thing anyway, because life is always moving. And when you're not healing, it's kind of like you're trying to resist the flow. So right. I like to mash in like personal growth and development with healing. And since we're talking about final stages of healing, it's almost like, what do you do once you've come over the hump and actually made some progress, but you're not 100% there yet? And that's what this whole series is about. Maybe you've gone through a years-long struggle of transformation, whether it's growing out of a chronic disease state or just finding yourself in life. How do you really end up at this long-lasting, sustainable place of wellness and self-confidence and success, not necessarily monetary life success, but like actual success in life where you are embodying your best self?
I think that's so important. Healing and self-growth are so big on social media today. It's hard to, if you have that sort of mindset, it's impossible not to end up following someone on Instagram or Facebook that talk about healing and growth. And I have found that it's very hard to find a just like a detailed step-by-step, like, this is what you need to do in order to heal.
Yeah.
Everyone's always just like, oh, I've been doing so much healing lately. And you're like, well, okay, what have you been doing? Right. And it's never spelled out for you. And I think that was kind of what the purpose of the series was to do, is to give actual action steps in how to, once you've recognized and identified and found how to start your healing process, like what steps to actually take.
And unfortunately, on like shorthand social media outlets like Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, people that are health influencers are aware of how badly people need just very simple advice. But because they cater to that, you never get to, okay, you have your low-hanging fruits taken care of. What do you do next? You know, so you have that list of, like, endless memes. You can find 10 a day or 100 a week if you really wanted to spend enough time looking for the same exact list. Get sunshine, breathe, get fresh air, eat clean food. But if you are really going through a dark night of the soul, or if you're really fighting one of these more difficult states of being to overcome in order to reclaim your vitality, you've already done all of that and you're still in the thick of it, right? And so we're really talking about having put in a lot of work, what to look back on, what to look forward to, how to go back and step-by-step analyze what you're missing as far as what's holding you down. And so today we're talking about letting go, because the less weight we have on our shoulders, the more space our mind has to tend to internal matters and affairs, right? So like how important is psychological and social health for physical health to return?
I think it's really important. A lot of times nowadays we view the human body as separated systems. There's doctors for cardiovascular, you know, heart disease things. You might see that doctor for one thing and then another doctor for endocrine issues. You know, that's just everything's so separate, and really the human body is one organism, and we're just made up of all these parts that are so intertwined and interconnected that we sometimes don't realize how one thing can affect other things. So if we don't take care of the psychological and social health, it's going to be really hard for the physical health to come to where we want it.
Right. And a point that everybody makes all the time in chiropractic is that you can't have true health without addressing not only toxins and traumas that are physical, but emotional and spiritual as well, mm-hmm. right? And so when you look at a healthy human, there's no healthy human that's ever had a constant perception of grudges, of miscommunication, of vendettas, of things left unsaid, of dishonesty, of just the constant rattle or chatter and static that's in the modern mind that didn't used to exist back when society was more in harmony with culture and with the earth, you know, because that really is the basis of healthy spiritual conduct and of healthy family units, right? So these emotional burdens can be just as deadly as physical toxins.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can just look at how much someone who becomes depressed and how that just deteriorates their physical being. There's statistics that I can't recall the exact numbers off my head, but you know, once a elderly person gets put into some sort of nursing home where their social interactions dramatically decrease, their health decreases, their morbidity rates go up.
Oh yeah.
It's everything is connected. There are so many examples that we could give.
Yeah. One that I really want to touch on is what a healthy family unit looks like in indigenous cultures where the elderly live long health spans and then have very rapid short declines before their death. You can even look at the blue zones where people live the longest historically, and having been through more than one graduate level program where I've looked at this by now, and then also having listened in on many, many conversations regarding them on several podcasts run by doctors and researchers and scientists, it's just unbelievable, you know, and health influencers alike, like Ben Greenfield, not necessarily a doctor, but better than 99.999% of doctors on earth as far as getting people healthy. And they talk about what the blue zone research really means when you actually read them instead of taking people's word for it. A lot of the time they are brought up in the context of nutrition, and wrongly so, because first of all, they point out, oh, look at all the plants in the diet, when really it's the absence of processed bullshit and the fact that they're eating real food from real living soil, and then
around the family table.
Around the family table, and not to mention there's a lot of animal products in there that aren't mentioned by, you know, the plant-based propagandist people. But the point is that it is family relations that is the real core tenet. There have been studies for Loma Linda, California, and the Seventh-day Adventist communities, which is the I think the only blue zone in North America, where they compare them to populations. They compare them and they compare populations from around the world that also have similar cultural values, like a religious practice that brings people together as far as the family culture goes. And then they take these vegetarian religious-based communities and they compare them to health outcomes and longevity and mortality statistics from populations without the culture, and the outcomes are almost completely reversed, suggesting that it is the fact that they have family and they have love and they have people around them well into their elderly years, and elders are revered in these populations, and they're still very active. They go walking, they get outside and play, they still garden. You know, the blue zone over in Greece, they have a lot of sex into their 90s. That's their big thing, is sex and rosemary. you know, Okinawa, just a very big outdoor lifestyle where they are connected to the sea and they grow their own food. But they are also invested in a very tight family unit in the way that we would have been back before city-state centralized civilization occurred. You know,
I mean, I can even think of the people I know in my life and the happiest people who are like genuinely happy, not necessarily the people that have all the money. It's the people that have spirituality in their life. They have a close-knit family. They have friends. They're constantly doing social things, giving, receiving. It's they just live a very balanced life. And you can see that in how just truly happy they are.
Yes. If you look at the most successful people in your own lives at home and who you consider to be in trouble as well and compare them just in your head, I know many very wealthy people who are tortured.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also have had elderly people in my own life who, even though they were very sick in later years, were sort of content and happy. And I think that you've experienced that as well. Like, they were miserable as far as their own health goes at some point. Like, that's a huge struggle. Right. I've experienced that in my 20s. Health is a big burden, but they were grateful. You can't be grateful and alone.
Mm-hmm.
And gratitude really goes a long way. You know, like, think about where the matriarchs and the patriarchs of your family get their wisdom from, like where their love and adoration and respect comes from if they aren't isolated. You think about how everybody, when you're a kid, you think about how everybody looks up to that person and how they're really appreciated and loved by everybody around them. And that's what makes them wealthy.
Yeah, I think it's important to then follow that thought train and figure out where this wisdom comes from. And I truly believe it comes from learning to let go. You know, you have to experience things that are perceived as negative. You have to meet challenges in your life in order to grow and gain that wisdom. But you're not actually going to grow or gain the wisdom if you don't learn how to let go, how to take the things that you learned and leave the rest behind. If you don't let go, you just end up in this negative cyclical circle. You know, you just end up in this back and forth, round and round process where you're not growing, you're not healing, you're not letting go.
Yeah. Where your awareness goes, energy flows, right?
Yes.
And so how are you going to have internal peace if you are in turmoil inside? You can't have optimal grounds for true and total healing if you're always worried about something or always recounting. You know, Paul Check calls it stinking thinking. If you're always worried about something, anxious or depressed, you're depressed about what's happened in the past and where you are at presently, or you're anxious about what might be to come, and all of these hypothetical scenarios in our heads never occur the way that you worry about them occurring.
Right.
And what has happened in the past is done. And all we can do, instead of lending energy to the deleterious outcomes you may have experienced so far as what you didn't want to happen, the only thing we could do about that is by starting to live differently. You know, Bruce Lee said, "As you think, so shall you become." He was a big studier of Zen philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so multiple cultures across multiple millennia where everybody has known this. So how do we enable ourselves to resolve any open-ended conflict we have and like free ourselves to be able to give back? And that means also like give to ourselves truly and honestly.
I think a lot of that comes from learning to refill our cups. Just referring to, you know, the metaphor of, you know, how full is your cup? You need to be able to have water in your cup in order to give and pour into other cups. Learning to take care of yourself and filling up that cup is really what I've experienced to be the best indicator of my ability to let go. When my cup is empty and I'm struggling to just get through the day because I don't have energy, I don't have space, you know, I can't I can barely function, let alone grow and learn and heal and let go.
Yeah. So basically what we're talking about here starts within. Mm-hmm. It is nothing short of personal evolution. You know, we have to get our shit straight in order to then be able to have hard conversations with other people, in order to let go of more weight, in order to heal your relationships. You have to heal your relationship with self. So first we're going to talk about strategies on how to develop a relationship with self in order to grow personally into more of a mature psycho-spiritual stage of life, because nothing short of that actually brings true lasting health and healing. It can be a journey. It doesn't happen overnight. But if you are one of those people out there who we are speaking to that have gone through years and years and years of effort, and you still have to try hard in order to feel good on any given day, then you're looking at an evolution that still needs to happen, right?
Hmm.
So first we're going to talk about how to clear your relationship with yourself and actual action steps on that. And then we're going to talk about, okay, so now that we have a self-centeredness enough to be kind of optimistic internally, where you allow your body and your mind and your nervous system space for healing and for just normal proper maintenance and operation, how we can then take that space we've created, take that cup that we've filled, and go heal our relationships with other people with mm-hmm. the art of hard conversations that need had, and tying up loose strings and anchors in your life of what you may have accumulated, like sludge or spider webs all over you, energetically or ethereally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that's it. Within and without, throughout, is what we're getting at here. And we're going to try to do it succinctly. It's a lot to cover, but it's really important. And ironically, it starts with what you should start with at the beginning. So we're talking about late stages of healing, but we can't talk about late stages of healing without making sure that everybody has started with the right beginning. That's why, you know, in my original series on what it means to be like a whole human being with a whole complete journey without the holes in it, like I compared it to like the reverse of a Jenga game, where you're putting Jenga pieces back in the tower so that it doesn't fall over and you don't have holes in it. I talked about the seven foundational principles that I organize my life around, being love, peace, freedom, health, strength, endurance, and willpower. And in love, I emphasized that although this is first and foremost, that you need to come from a place of unconditional love, and that you need to know who you are and what you're not and have a relationship with self. Most people start with like strength or endurance or will, which is the last three,
right?
You know, or even with health, and then they don't have peace or freedom before that. And then you recognize and go back, and that's okay. But there are many, many people out in the world who have multi-year healing journeys and growth journeys that have not ever consistently taken up a practice of mindfulness or meditation. And so we can't talk about this without first saying, like, what do you do first in order to shed what is not self and develop a relationship with the self and with the soul? It's meditate.
Hmm.
So that's our first action step. And we're going to explain why. In your opinion, like, if you're going to throw out a percentage, what percentage of people that we know who are growth-oriented actually have a consistent practice? And we know some really amazing freaking people.
Okay, so I'm narrowing down to the people that are health-oriented or growth-oriented.
Growth-oriented, yes.
Okay, and then I have to figure out which ones of those have a consistent mindfulness, meditation, gratitude practice.
Yeah.
10%?
I would say 10%. We'll leave it at 10. I feel like that might be generous, or it might be a little bit undercutting, but maybe that's a good sweet spot. And
yeah,
that means that 9 out of 10 people listening to this, assuming that you're all growth-oriented or at least growth-curious, have work to do, because what meditation allows us to do, and honestly, all of the other suggestions that we have for you guys today build off of that, that your outcomes will be exponentially increased, your understanding of what every other thing is doing in your life and in your body is going to be increased by meditation and practice. Like, what it does is remove you as an observer from your thoughts. And so if you're in stinking thinking, you can begin to, through mantra or through breath or any meditation practice, by the way, I'm teaching it at patreon.com/forwarderhealth.
Great plug.
Yeah, I mean, it's the highest quality meditation instruction for the lowest price that exists. Hmm. You can pay, you can do Sam Harris's Waking Up app, and it's free for 30 days. That's perfect. If you know somebody who already has the app, you can get free for 30 days from them if they haven't already given it away. But otherwise, that's $100 a year, and you have to pay up front. I paid well over $1,000 for a transcendental meditation practice in 2016. Mm-hmm. And then Vedic meditation is not much cheaper, depending on who you are. Like, they'll work with you if you're a student, either one of those organizations. But it is hundreds or thousands of dollars to learn meditation. You can probably go on YouTube and find a little bit for free. But yeah, I've learned from so many sources. We both read books on meditation. Mm-hmm. We've read you've read Radical Acceptance. Mm-hmm. We've read When Things Fall Apart by Pema Chodron, who's a famous meditation instructor. And that's really just a book on how to meditate. When it comes down to it. And then you've also read Awakening from the Daydream by David Nickturn. Mm-hmm. That's about meditation. I'm about to read that as well. Like, I've probably learned from between 5 and 10 different sources at this point on how to meditate. And I feel like I have a really good grip on the inner mechanics. And so, yeah.
Or all of that to say, meditation actually is easy.
Yeah.
Don't let how complex we just made learning from a good source sound to think that it is complicated or that
not at all. I just hear a bunch of people saying that they meditate, and then I ask, oh, like, where did you learn or how do you meditate? And they'll say something like, I go outside and I go in nature, or I just sit with myself. And like, sitting with yourself is that's just not a lot of people say they meditate and they've never actually been taught how. And a lot of people say that they struggle to meditate or that they absolutely can't because they can't sit with themselves. And it's like, okay, who's taught you? No one. And so it's very easy.
Was it on Joe Rogan or some other podcast the other day that we heard them talk about how they think there's a lot of people that just sit there and have conversations with themselves instead of actually meditating?
Yeah. It's like, and how most of it's bullshit because of that. Like, you know, like, and then forcing your thoughts out of your head is the most common misperception of people who don't want to try it. That's not, if it's forceful, it's not meditation. It's all easy. Mm-hmm. And so the point is that it's important to learn, and then when you learn, it is just critical to your well-being in life. It's unbelievable what it can do. I used to have stinking thinking for like 2/3 of my life. Mm-hmm. I just had this realization like today or yesterday, honestly, or like this morning or yesterday, just coincidentally, in thinking about this conversation, I was like, hold on a second. I'm not a stinking thinker anymore. And it's been a really long time, but I don't worry. I'm not anxious. I don't think about, I used to be one of those people that has daydreams constantly all day long, couldn't shut off my brain as a teenager or whatever, worrying about everything that could happen to me. And none of like the daydream nightmares ever occur. And I knew that they never did, but I didn't know how to get rid of them. And so if you're always thinking about what could go wrong, and if somebody said, I always think about what can go wrong, I would have said, oh, I'm not one of those people, because those words, I didn't feel, it was those cognitive dissonance. A lot of people have cognitive dissonance. Mm-hmm. You might not even know you have stinking thinking. I think that you can only recognize that you had stinking thinking after you get rid of stinking thinking. Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
Yeah. So you might not even know how well your body and your mind can operate until after you work on it, and you have to learn how.
I think it's important to just note here that it loops back into last week's conversation about consistency. When you do consistently meditate, even for a couple of days, you're going to start noticing a difference. Yeah. And the end goal is to just help clarify what matters and doesn't in your own brain. It keeps you from getting caught in the past, from getting caught in the future. It allows you to be present so that you can deal with the situations at hand in a calm, collected manner. And I really don't know if you can truly let go of things if you're not in the present, calm, cool, and collected.
If you're not present, if you're not here now, then you haven't let go. Mm-hmm. And so meditation allows you to begin to let go of all of the things that are weighing on you because it shows you that you are not them. Mm-hmm. When you don't know that you are not in your thoughts, then you are emotionally and energetically invested in the thought like it's happening to you.
Right.
Your brain can't tell the difference. And what meditation does is removes us as the observer of the thought, and then you could recognize that it doesn't have control over you. You have control over it, and you can release it, mm-hmm. and then return to being here and now. That's what meditation does, at least at the onset. It goes deeper than that. There's mm-hmm. real science, what happens in the physiology, what happens in the brainwave states, what happens in right-left hemisphere synchronization, what happens with polyvagal tone. We'll move on, but the benefits are really profound and endless.
Yes. Other things that we can do to help prepare ourselves to let go.
So one of the crucial things is that once you realize who you are and what you aren't as far as your thoughts or whatever, or begin to work on it, you can then have conversations with yourself. Mm. And you can have really honest conversations with yourself. You can start journaling if you really wanted to. I think journaling is one of the most powerful practices on earth. But we're going to talk about something a little bit more rare and unutilized, where you don't need to even go on Amazon and buy a pen and paper. You can just walk into your bathroom, look in the mirror, and have a conversation with yourself. So we're mm-hmm. talking about mirror work. Mirror work is almost like a lost art. And I found it intuitively. It would be over a year after I discovered it myself on my own, before I even heard it mentioned once. And even now, I only know of two separate sources that it even exists as. One is like a chiropractor lady who wrote a book on it that's a 21-day challenge. And another was like a tiny mention of somebody in a different conversation at a podcast about something else talked about mirroring. If you've ever eye gazed before in a growth experience, a seminar, a retreat, or a workshop like we both have, then you will be somewhat familiar with the effects of looking somebody in the eye and watching the layers peel away and looking at all the different experiences that come as far as gazing into the window of the soul. What happens when you do this with another person, which is standing like 3-4 feet apart from each other for several minutes at a time, for those that don't know, and looking each other in the eye, and then wild realizations occur, mm-hmm. right? When you do this with yourself, it can be almost like the first time you've ever met yourself. Because we look at each other in the mirror, or we look at ourselves in the mirror every time we brush our teeth or whatever, but we never really look at ourselves.
Yeah.
And when you gaze into your own eye for long enough, you can see your sorrow, you can see your joy, you can see the wear and tear, you can see the vitality, you can see the wisdom. You can see where you're at, and then conversations can naturally occur. If it doesn't, that's fine. If it does, roll with it. I suggest that if you do it silently and nothing comes up, that the next time you do it, you might just simply say after a while, and you'll find that it's almost like your highest self is addressing the part that really needs help. Mm. You can simply say, "Hello, how are you?" And go from there.
I think when we're staring at ourselves in the mirror, it kind of peels back this layer. You know, if you're just getting dressed in front of the mirror, you're not sitting there ready for this type of practice, it's very easy to just pick apart the way you're shaped, excess body fat, not enough muscle tone. But when we sit there and stare in our own eye and we open up that gateway, it's more like, you know, looking your best friend in the eye, listening to them tell you these things that you would normally think about yourself. So if your best friend's sitting there telling you, oh, I'm fat, or I don't like this about my body, blah, 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 I would hope that your instinct isn't to agree with them and put them down further. But no, you're going to be coming from a higher place and be like, you know, that's okay. Like, these are all the positive things about you. That's not important, etc. And yeah. When you stare at yourself in the mirror and you peel back that initial layer, you're going to find yourself having empathy for yourself.
Yeah.
And I don't know that a lot of people do that.
No.
They don't take the time to dig back and, you know, allow their past self to grieve or comfort them.
That's an unbelievable way to put it. Like, having empathy for yourself. Mm. That's really profound. Like, the end result of all of this is self-efficacy and walking through the world with a pep in your step as opposed to anchors dragging behind you. Right. But like, having self-empathy is really, that's a powerful statement. And that's exactly what happens.
Yeah. And I think there's a quote from, which I'm going to butcher the quote, but I got this thought train from Anthony DeMello's Awareness. And he says that we can't hold ourselves accountable for the things that we did before we were awake. Mm. So if you do things in your past that you just didn't realize how harmful they would be, or that you would regret them in the future, allowing those things to control you and keep you from having self-empathy is just, I mean, that's how you're just stuck.
Yeah.
And you're never going to, you need to learn to let go of those things and forgive yourself in order to move on and heal and grow.
Yeah. And like, it's not like the forgiving of yourself is like a conscious decision, but when you see yourself in the mirror and you really, really see yourself, it kind of happens automatically.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll give a few more cues before we move on. Like, you really, this has to be felt and experienced.
Mm-hmm.
It's really powerful. Like, meditation sets you up to be able to be conscious enough with yourself to do this practice. And it doesn't have to be done all the time, but like, if you're going through a dark night of the soul or some sort of personal crisis or major life shift, or you've been sick for a long time and you're kind of like at a standstill, the mirror can really be your friend. And that, yeah. You know, and that's really one of the deepest ways you can be your own self-support. And so after you get past the hello, thank yourself for being there. Thank you for being here. You know, I know you've been through a lot. Ask yourself, are you okay? Or tell yourself, everything is okay. You're doing great. Thank you for weathering the storm. I appreciate everything that you have put energy toward in trying to come out of this hole, you know? Or ask yourself, what is it that you need in order to feel whole and get honest, heartfelt answers? Like, any of this can be tremendous. Yeah. And let it happen naturally. Like, you can take notes and write down, maybe I'll put this in the show notes even, like suggested cues for mirror work for today's episode, but just know that you can let it come naturally and say whatever you need to say.
Yeah.
So mirror work being as close to a psychedelic experience as you can possibly get without having a psychedelic experience, or I've even had psychedelic experiences through mirror work. That's another story that may or may not. I mean, people have had psychedelic experiences through meditation. So really it's a matter of where your spiritual like connection and evolution is at and what type of person you are, I believe. But now that you have gone in and accepted everything about you through that practice, what is left on the table is what's in the subconscious.
Mm.
So meditation and mirroring and lighter breathwork practices can reveal more of the subconscious and bring it into conscious, but it will never get deep down into the root of a full-blown altered state of consciousness that a holotropic breathwork ceremony or entheogenic substance like psilocybin or ketamine therapy, which is all becoming much, much more official as it nears acceptance of federal legality across the country in present day. not to say that you have to go and take what past generations would have labeled drugs. I consider them plant medicine. I consider drug a verb. Like, to drug is to escape your reality.
If you go back far enough, then they would be plant medicine.
Yeah, plant medicines. This is a confrontation with reality, not an escape, is what I'm trying to say. There are other ways of doing it. I know people who have had full-blown psychedelic experiences through EMDR therapy or tapping. I know and have experienced myself psychedelic experiences through breath work and hypnosis regression therapy.
Chiropractic.
And chiropractic, but that's a whole other story. That takes a very specific set of conditions. Like breath work and EMDR and hypnosis is like you can sort of count on it.
Yeah.
Chiropractic is a different
category. Yeah, I think EMDR is a very common and accepted and researched.
And so is regression, hypnosis, and breath work. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just that they're newer in the healthcare space. EMDR and tapping have been around a little longer. But anyway, the point is you're switching from focusing on clearing out your conscious mind to diving into the subconscious mind to traumas and conditionings that may be shaping tremendous amounts of your behavior and holding you back from lots and lots of healing space that you don't even know existed.
Right.
And so I resolved a tremendous load off of my shoulders by revealing childhood traumas to me through this type of work that I didn't even know had a chance of being real in my personal history, but they were more real than what I thought was real before they were brought into my awareness, right? And so I will leave it at that. We're not going to, this is not a masterclass on psychedelic experience. It's just that there are two sides of the coin. There's what you can dig up on your own and what you need a highly skilled guide or practitioner and then method and integration in order to dig up and uncover and let go of. And that is what the shadow self is keeping from us. The shadow self being the part of you in your mind, and this is hard science, that is in charge of compartmentalizing and hiding away and stowing everything that our psyche would not be able to handle as human beings all in one moment. And so it's what keeps us sane by keeping us safe from the things we're not prepared to work through yet.
Yes. And just to reiterate, we do highly recommend that you put in the work beforehand and you research the type of psychedelic experience you're looking for, and find some sort of experienced, reputable guide to help you through those experiences.
Yeah, that's becoming more and more and more dangerous nowadays. I'm sure that if you live on the coasts, like New York or LA or San Francisco, you have people in your contacts list on your phone that would totally invite you to like an ayahuasca ceremony in the middle of San Francisco instead of in Peru with shamans that have been doing it their whole lives, you know, and so on and so forth. Like, ketamine has historically been known as a party drug. It's not. These are very, very serious. Like, even breathing, and you can get EMDR apps on your phone. If you don't know how to integrate, you need an experienced therapist or guide or healer. To help you through these things. Find the most legitimate practice you can. These are practices that are going to be legalized across the country within a year. I know that our old sauna place here in St. Louis is now doing ketamine therapy.
Oh, wow.
And I'm just like, they didn't even know how to work a sauna. You know, like, I would be concerned about doing ketamine therapy at a place where their main doctor was on vacation in Peru and everybody else there was just a glorified cashier when we used to, you know, so.
Yeah, just do your due diligence. You know, these are serious practices, and we'll leave it at that.
Okay. Hard conversations. This is not with ourselves. We've done that. This is hard conversations with other people. I like to think of this as a metaphor where throughout life in the modern world, in Western civilization, we walk through a forest and we walk down a path, and every 20 yards or so, there's another spider and there's a spider web. And the spider sitting on a branch, you got this golden spider there. I've written this in a journal entry before. I thought that that was pretty dope. And you can turn to the spider and you can bow and the spider will let you pass. Or you can not acknowledge the spider and you can continue to walk and you can accumulate webs until you're nothing but a blind, deaf, and dumb stumbling cocoon tripping over every root in the forest, right? And acknowledging and honoring and bowing to the spider means that you are resolving all conflict as it occurs to you in an honorable, non-violent, and non-confrontational, healthy manner. We don't do this. We don't. Like, this is a huge topic. Maybe we'll have an entire podcast at some point just on like attachment theory and nonviolent communication, which like I'm currently studying right now and will continue to, because it's a doozy. We are not taught nonviolent communication and conflict resolution in today's society. That is why we have tremendous divorce rates and very unhealthy family units that argue and scream at each other all the time. And I'm confident in saying that, like, maybe not all the time, but there are blow-ups.
Increasing suicide rates. Social media bullying.
Increasing rates of obesity, even. Increasing prescription medications for children for anxiety and depression. Increasing substance abuse. That's all compensation. That is all a compensation for trauma. And that is all severe outcomes. We're talking about not an either or, a black and white, but a spectrum. We all have trouble with accumulating these webs of things left unsaid or things said in the wrong way that weigh on us, right? And that is one of the ways where at some point we end up worrying about everything that could go wrong with any conversation that's upcoming that we have to have. We're worried about being attacked or having to attack. And so we invest in these hypothetical scenarios so deeply that you live more in the false reality than you do real life. And then when real life plays out, it doesn't matter if it's the same. You're on to torturing yourself about the next scenario because you have all of this accumulation of it sludge in the basement or anchors behind you or strings that are tethered to people energetically in weird ways, even people you don't know anymore. And you know what? This can be something years and years ago or decades ago that you only think about once every 3 years. But when it comes back, that just means it's still there, even if you never think about it anymore.
I know for me personally, one of the spider webs that I used to love to collect was just replaying how I handled a situation or what I should have said instead or what I didn't say or what I did say and it wasn't acceptable, or it was, you know, just constantly replaying those what ifs and what should have been. And man, can that just, it gets heavy.
Yeah, you know.
It weighs you down.
And then you end up making decisions based on avoiding similar situations to play out like the ones that have gone wrong in the past. And your central governor or your ego self protects you from going out and living your life. I can't even imagine how much life out there is being left unlived. Like, I'm going to get personal here, just among our listenership, just among the audiences listening to this, let alone worldwide, because of this fear response, which is what it is. It doesn't feel like fear. But if you are worrying about this or thinking about how things went wrong in the past, then how much of your current daily situations are being altered and your behavior is being altered based on what's happened, right?
So I think I just had a quote pop into my head, and I know it's from like a TV show. I don't know if it was from an actual person and they included it in the TV show or what, but it went to the tune of, the minefields in life never go away, we just get better at navigating them. Uh-huh. And I think that that is such a huge point to consider in this topic, because we're going to have hard conversations for the rest of our life.
Yeah.
Like, even the most enlightened, growth-oriented people are going to run into situations in which there is a spider web. You can't ignore these spider webs, because you can't control every little thing around you or every person that you run into. So you
have to know how to bow to the spider.
Yes. You get better at navigating the spider webs. They don't disappear. And so I think that's just important to remember. All these practices that we've talked about prior help prime you to learn how to bow to that spider, how to navigate that minefield.
Yeah. And we're not licensed psychologists or therapists. We can't tell you how to do this, honestly. Like, I can make suggestions in a one-on-one coaching situation for individual situations, but right now we're just bringing it to people's awareness that there is a way to do this, that you don't have to live with that weight, and that once you relieve yourself of that weight, you have a lot of space for... Imagine the amount of energy taken up. Like, that energy can then be used to regulate and repair your body.
Yeah.
That's the truth. If you're repairing your mind, you're repairing your body, and vice versa. But you can't repair your body without repairing the mind.
Yes. I think a good way to, if this is a new concept and you just, you know, are kind of, you want to take it on, you're not really sure where to start, start small. Don't tackle the, you know, 20-year grudges that you have between you and your mom, or start with the next time a friend kind of offends you, instead of just quote unquote letting it roll off your back but still holding on to that grudge. You know, work on confronting the situation in a non-violent way,
and in a non-violent way means that you're not reactive. So the first step is to take a breath, a deep breath, close your eyes for a second, and think about, maybe instead of like, how dare you say that, like, what made you feel that way? What made you feel that way? Or how do you think that makes me feel? Just very general, like, go by feeling instead of how it made you react. You know, and have that conversation instead of not having it.
Right.
There is a proper setting and timing for this.
Yes.
If you already have a ton of primary stress right in front of you, then it's not time for that 20-year resolution of conflict. We were actually given a presentation at my first chiropractic orientation about this practice of resolving these big conflicts in life, because you're about to go through a tremendous... like, journey of a doctor program. Like, seriously, the school administration had a talk.
I don't remember.
This was at Life.
During your orientation.
Yeah, during my orientation.
I thought you meant, like, the welcome weekend thing that we went to together.
I don't remember which one it was in.
I don't remember this, so okay. It was probably your orientation that I didn't... now I kind of wish that I had had that.
So it was hilarious because they gave this whole presentation, really good speaker, about it, and then they said... during a DC program, this might not be enough time to have that conversation and integrate. It's like, you're giving us this wonderful piece of life advice and then telling us, wait 3.5 years. But the sentiment really stuck with me. And they suggested, I know you have a point that you want to bring up here about, like, you need to make sure the other person is ready also. If they're in a mess, then how do you bring it up, right? They made the suggestion of writing a letter and getting it off your back by putting it down on paper. And I thought that that's really profound, you know? Not even a letter to them. Just write out everything that is down in the basement. Get it all out of you. And then you can reread it, and, like, the emotion goes with it. It's amazing how that can work. That person never has to get that letter. You can write it to that person from a heartfelt space instead of an aggravated space, and then actually send it if you have the time and space for it, and if you believe that they have even 0.0001% chance of responding positively. You'll know.
I think that I love the letter idea. I've used this in my own life. Especially for long-standing confrontations that weren't had. So when you're, you know, have a friend or a parent figure that you have, just things that weren't said over the years, it's very hard to have those conversations face-to-face, especially if both people are not in a very centered, very calm space, because it can just be offensive when you're like, oh, you're bringing up something that I did 20 years ago and you didn't bother to tell me that that bothered you then. So it's very hard to keep those emotions under control. And so I have found that having one person sit down, write a letter, put it all out there, reread it a few times just to make sure that you weren't saying things in, you know, an emotional way. And then giving it to the other person, allowing them to have the time to read it and let it integrate and maybe read it again and be like, oh, okay, like I can kind of see where they're coming from.
Yeah.
But when you have that face to face and, you know, you start interrupting each other and you start the emotions of everyone just start rising, and it's very hard to contain all of that. The letter for like long standing things is, I think, just a really great way to go about it.
And I've had successes and failures with both. I really have. You have to go in prepared for adverse outcomes, and even that adverse outcome occurring is better than nothing ever happening. Because the way to it might be like the world is ending in the moment, like when you have an argument with your family when you're still a kid or whatever, and then a week later the relationship is still healthier.
Yeah.
It is true, because everything's on the table.
Yep.
And if, unfortunately, at some point a relationship really does fall apart because of this, then it wasn't supposed, you know, maybe it wasn't supposed to be. Yeah. But anyways, I just want to mention one more thing before transitioning and maybe winding down here, because we've covered a lot of ground already, that we need to talk about what to do if a conversation really needs to wait. And maybe that person will never be ready. Maybe you're not ready, whatever. Still writing the letter and then not sending it, that's obviously a great way. But in that letter, you need to make sure that you're fully acknowledging the situation. Like, thank yourself for holding on to the feelings that you've held on to, and accept that it's not the right time right now. If you just accept in yourself that it is not the right time to let this go, it's still in a form letting it go. You can move on for now, and you don't have to hold any of this weight alone. You can call in your highest self, your guides, your divine protections, whatever you want to call it, call in your spirit, tune into your heart space in your body, like literally physically, where awareness goes, energy flows, and ask them, like, if you are a believer in God, you could even ask God, help me hold this weight. You know, it's not the right time right now. I understand that this is unnecessary for this to be burdening me. I need help to let this go for now, even without a resolution. So I'm rambling a little bit, but the point is, you don't need a resolution in order to let it off your shoulders. You don't need to wear that 50-pound backpack.
Yes. Yeah, there are ways to release these spider webs with, even if the other person is never ready to. You can do this by yourself, and I think that's just important to remember, because you're just not always going to be able to get the other person on the same page.
Right. And I think that is where we're going to kind of close out for the day. We had boundaries and a completely kind of different and new and nuanced discussion of what boundaries mean, when you are on a healing journey or a growth journey surrounded by people who aren't, or who have expectations on you, like of you.
Yeah.
And their expectations are not what or who you are anymore. But considering that we are having an episode coming up on the philosophy of healing as part of being in your final stages of healing, I think that we might move it to that. The philosophy episode is probably already going to be a two-parter. It's a doozy. And so we're going to break it up and make it more digestible. And we're going to move boundaries up. Because boundaries is not unless you end up going to a workshop on boundaries where they teach you how to activate them, which is not what this conversation was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like the kind of action step that we've already touched on in this episode. And I think it's best to save it for another day.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I think we've already covered a lot here, and it can take a long time to to really dig into letting go. Like we mentioned, it's going to be an ongoing practice throughout the rest of your life. Making sure you're not holding on to anything. But it can be a lot if you've gone through a large growth journey. If you've grown a lot, where you used to be, there's probably a lot of stuff that you need to work through and let go of.
Yeah.
So that can take time. And, this comes after being consistent in areas that are going to help you into that final stages of healing.
Yeah. I mean, we are skipping over the low-hanging fruit that we're assuming that people have done.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people have not done the low-hanging fruit. So this is really... we could have talked about letting go of your need for sugar, or letting go of your need for watching TV too late at night, or letting go of staring at your phone in bed. But like that, if you really are sick or you really are trying to get ahead in life, you know what? Like that should have already gotten let go of. And so this conversation might have felt esoteric for some listeners, but take it as a glimpse of where you need to end up as far as where your letting go practice is going to lead if you still are in those earlier stages.
I think it's important to note that, especially this last topic we talked about as far as having hard conversations and those spider webs that we've accumulated, a lot of those low-hanging fruits are intertwined with that, and you might be struggling to let go of something because you haven't dealt with some anchor
your own stuff
you back.
Yeah,
so
that's what, even in this episode we talked about us before we talked about us in relation to other people.
Mm-hmm.
So having said that, next week we are starting our philosophy of healing episode, and that will most likely be two parts. We're going to be talking about boundaries once again, we're going to be talking about being your own primary care physician, we're going to be talking about purging attachments from your life of those who think lesser of you than who you really are. We're going to be talking about holding containers of time for yourself, and of journaling, and what to do with work you can't handle in any given day or week or month. We're going to be talking about what truly matters, which is arriving at gratitude and seeing universal value in all of the details of your journey. So like literally thanking God for your pain and suffering, which is really, really deep. And you can insert whatever word you need for God in order to be open to receiving that message, because it is crucial. And then we're going to be talking about ancient principles of samatvam and tattva, which is real truth and knowing, and then universal equality of the importance of all individual forms of life. We're going to be talking about getting closer to what is natural and how that is getting closer to healed as a universal principle. And you can see that on the front page of our website, like what is good for the earth is good for humankind and vice versa. So,
oh yeah, that's a two-part episode.
Oh yeah, it's going to be intense.
And but there's so many good topics in there. I can't wait to dig into that and discuss it.
Oh, it's going to be a blast. And then after that is going to be even more fun. We're going to be backpaddling right into biohacking. Ooh. And then probably having a two-part series on real food. And by then, we will have interviews back on the show. Not that they ever left. It's just that, like, we're kind of intermingling.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, we are sometimes doing it with just the two of us and sometimes having somebody really cool on the show. And we have a lot of great guests coming up that have me like ecstatic to be doing the work that we're doing. So a lot of talk about our relationships with nature and with our sense of place and with local ecosystems and learning to get outside. And the fall season is one of our favorite seasons to do that. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be really exciting to have conversations that pertain to that coming up with people that we really look up to. So, yeah. All right. Until next week, know that you are loved, that you are never alone, and that if you need help remembering that, please feel free to reach out. Please, if you find value in the show, go rate and subscribe and review and make everybody else that you know do so as well, because we really need help expanding our outreach, and it would mean the world to us. That is how we grow our listenership and how our value is spread out into the world. So you are doing a service to all who you know by sharing our content. You're not just doing a solid for us. We really appreciate it. And Emily?
That's it. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for joining us. Until next week.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.